Fixing hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an FU commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Part two.
I'm Greg Wyshynski of ESPN, the worldwide leader in fawning over Jack Hughes, which is what I've been doing for the last several hours.
I'm Ryan Lambert from the NHL's puck quality assurance team.
Sean McAdoo from The Athletic.
And you're in puck soup. Well, hell, Lambert, we might as well start there. For those who didn't hear, the NHL had to recall all of its pucks because the special puck and player tracking pucks that they had ordered from, I guess, the same company that made them for the playoffs last year. I haven't gotten confirmation on that. They keep on changing the manufacturing partners for this stuff. They got a batch of pucks. They had the chip inside the puck or what have you. That would be monitored by the antennas around each rink so we can find out how many miles Connor McDavid skated in a game and all that fun stuff. And the pucks don't slide, which is a problem in hockey, I think, in general.
Yeah, Tristan Jarry's like, I know, right? It's crazy.
Well, it's funny. I mentioned McDavid. Like, the Oilers' power play has been dog shit to start the season. And if
that's
a puck
weird.
If you have a puck that doesn't slide, like, wouldn't that indicate that maybe?
Yeah, but other teams' power plays are fine. You can't selectively go, you know what, this thing that I didn't think was going to happen, this is where the evidence of the problem is.
Oh, you can absolutely do that. And this is thank you to the pucks for giving many
John
teams
Tortorella,
one week mulligan on everything.
I'm just saying the Oilers' power play is pinpoint accuracy and timing.
Yeah.
It's magic.
As the only team that actually slides the puck along the ice on their power play, every other team is just like taking slap shots at each other's heads.
Picking it up and throwing it.
So they recalled all the pucks. They said, we've heard your complaints, players, that you want to play hockey with a puck that slides. And they are going to use the regular old pucks from last season until they get a new batch of these smart pucks. And they say they're going to quality test them. So that's good news, I guess. And then they'll use them again at some point later in the season. So the saga of puck and player tracking continues. For those of us who have followed this story for what seems like decades now, we've gone from let's put a chip in the puck. The puck split when you hit them with your stick. To let's put a chip in the puck. The pucks don't slide. So we're getting better, I think.
Yeah, I think their big mistake this year was getting a puck that was shaped like a D&D die.
So that's the problem with the Oilers' power play is they didn't roll a 20 for double damage. That's obviously the issue. I mean, that's how my Dungeon Master played it. I'm not saying that's how your Dungeon Master played it. That's how my Dungeon Master played it.
Every player in the league has a zero for charisma.
Oh, fuck. We could go down a hell of a rabbit hole here, but we won't.
I think I'm out of D&D. I've never played D&D in my life. I don't know anything else.
I had a friend named Matt Young who lived down the street from me when I was growing up. And he was classic older brother. I was friends with his younger brother, Jeff. Classic older brother, into D&D, had Iron Maiden posters in his bedroom and shit. You know, like real painted van stuff, right?
Sounds cool.
So he was awesome. And so he was the dungeon master for the D&D games that we played. And, you know, my entire experience with Dungeons & Dragons is through those games. And I was for a while, like I was buying the sets and buying the dice. There was a place called the Hobby Shop in my town that sold all the dice. It was super fun. And then, of course, eventually, what did I do?
Get into Satan worship?
Oh. No, I went the completely opposite direction. I took all the dice and created my own role playing, but dice based baseball game in my bedroom.
That's the play that I used there. That's what you got.
Yeah, I used all my tops cards and created a game where, like, depending on what I rolled, it was either like a fastball or whatever, and then depending on what I rolled, it's what the hitter did, and you know. In a classic Greg Wyshynski move, went from the communal game in which you're all sitting around a table cracking jokes and having fun to just sitting in my room and playing by myself with dice. So, good stuff. The hell are we talking about? Oh, that's right, pucks. The biggest problem with this puck and player tracking thing for me is we still don't know if it's going to work. Like, they had this grand plan to do just sensors on the players, sensors in the pucks. They found out that... you know, the information they were getting was good, but maybe not complete. They included optical tracking, which is what the NBA does, to try to round out the picture. That's incomplete because the optical trackers can't pick up the puck sometimes when it's between legs. Anyone who's heard this podcast knows I'm very, very high on puck and player tracking as being a game changer, not only for the stats community, but for wagering. But it's these little moments of discouragement that make me think that we may never get to the point where it's going to be like a full-fledged thing in the National Hockey League.
Yeah, and who could have seen that coming? That they that they were like, oh, this is a really good idea. We have so many good ideas to like pivot off of, and then it didn't work out at all. I'm crazy. What an unexpected turn of events.
But the other thing, the other facet of your typical NHL cynicism that I think we should mention, because it's very much a factor in this, is they're cheap. And the technology that really would have worked without needing the other part of it, the optical tracking part of it, cost a lot of money. When the pucks would go into the crowd, you'd have to go get them because they cost a lot of money.
Yeah. And the first game I watched, or one of the first games I watched this year, they were like, oh, those pucks cost like $30 each now. This is crazy. Can you believe it? It's like, yeah, that seems like a fucking rounding error for a professional sports team, I would have thought. But
So that's the thing. And it cost a lot of money to fit the arenas with the stuff. A lot of their decision making in which way to go with puck and player tracking was based on the cost. So I guess you get what you pay for, as they say.
I mean, look, this is the league where like minor league players are going, you know what? I think I have to retire instead of playing in the AHL this year because I'm losing so much money. And the PHPA is like, and it would cost $8 million to make sure everybody's just turning out their pockets. Like, well, I guess that's the cost of doing business.
Yeah.
Unreal.
It's a hell of a trickle down in the minor leagues. It's ugly situation as far as people that can play and can't play. What has surprised you so far, Ryan Lambert, about this season? Negatively or positively?
Yeah, I mean, there's just been a lot of teams where you don't want to build or, you know, put too much stock into one or two games or three or four, however many all these teams have played now. But, like, I don't know. You look at the standings and you're just like, oh, the New Jersey Devils are third in the East? That's weird. You know, the Bruins can't score at all.
Yeah.
The Vancouver Canucks are the worst team in Canada. The Ottawa Senators look fine. Like, it's a lot of weird stuff going on for sure. And hey, maybe it is just the pucks, but yeah, the results have been bananas, I think, to date.
I mean, Dallas is in last place. It's crazy.
It's crazy. They haven't done anything.
But they also have the league's best power play, I understand, as well.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, no, penalty kill, rather.
I feel like Carolina's going to really give them a run for their money, though.
Yeah.
Sean, what about you? What surprised you?
I mean, I don't think anything jumps out as completely bizarre. You're three or four games in. You know, Ryan's right. You look at the standings, you're like, oh, I can't believe that team's there or that team's down there. But then you look and you're like, oh, it's 1 point separating them. I'm a little bit surprised that I had hoped that we might see scoring go way up, at least early on, just from the rust factor. Like the teams hadn't been at camp and, you know, maybe some systems weren't in place, and that hasn't really happened. Like the first night or two, there were some high scoring games, but haven't really seen it. Beyond that, I mean, Columbus stands out a little bit as a team that's maybe in more trouble than you might have thought.
Can't score.
I mean, Vancouver's the one that stands. The story, if you insisted on starting to craft a storyline out of the first week, which is the business we're in, the name that jumps out at me is Jacob Markstrom. Like, he goes from Vancouver to Calgary, not only beats the Canucks twice, but the Canucks can't keep the puck out of the net, and Calgary's sitting there with 5 points out of six, looking pretty good. Again, super early. I mean, it's literally one game. You change the result of one game, and the whole thing flips. But if I'm a Canucks fan right now, I'm kind of sitting there going, this, you know, it's, this isn't like, you know, if you're Boston and you can't score, you lost Chera, but also David Pastrnak's not there. So, okay, that's, yeah, we can explain what's going on here. You're Vancouver, you can't keep the puck out of the net. You just lost your goaltender. That, those two things might be related. It's not too hard to draw a line from one dot to another there. So that's where I would be mildly worried. But there's no team in the league right now where I'm like, I would be panicking. This is, you're much worse than expected. I mean, like, Chicago's a mess, but most of us saw that. Some of the other bad teams have been respectable, and that's good. You want to see a little bit of a fight from the Ottawas and Detroits and that sort of thing. Bobby Ryan, awesome story. I'm loving that.
Speaking of Detroit, looked like borderline competent right up until it all falls apart for them, you know?
Yeah.
And like, that's such a huge improvement from last year that, like, I watched that this is the, you know, sign of having a brain disease, I think, but I watched all of that Columbus-Detroit game on Monday.
Wow.
And, like, that game was – Detroit was, like, pushing Columbus around pretty good for a good chunk of it, and then it got away from them in the end. And I think, like, if you're a rebuilding team, that's kind of what you want, right? You just want to go, mm-hmm. You know what? We were in it for a while. Then it turned out, you know, half our roster shouldn't be in the NHL, so we didn't win at the end. You know, this, I think that's where you want to be with
they, your rebuild. They lost – like they lost like a quarter or a third of their games last year by four or more goals. Like, yeah. They weren't just losing. They were getting their doors blown off constantly.
Epically losing.
And, yeah. You know, now the flip side of that is they play four games. Each of their goalies has two starts. And I think they're about .930 save percentage as a team.
Sure.
With all due respect to Jonathan Bernier, Thomas Greiss, I don't think this is a team that's going to be .930 for the whole season. So,
that's what happens when you play Columbus, right?
But yes, hey, exactly. great news for Chicago. Detroit's trying this season, so enjoy the basement. It's good times. I think in some cases, like you said, Sean, the problems that we thought would exist for some teams definitely exist. Like Vancouver with the downgrading goal, but also can they play defense? So far, no. Edmonton with the goaltending issues saw it a mile away. Did not see the power play regression to that degree a mile away. And so on and so forth. Division by division, in the Honda West, you have Vegas, Colorado, St. Louis, Minnesota as we do the show.
Let's not do that.
That's exactly how I think it's going to probably end up. And then you have a big separation to the rest of the division eventually. In the Mass Mutual East, the Flyers look great. The Capitals and Penguins look good depending on the night. The Islanders have
Penguins five. Have looked,
I don't agree.
They've had some moments, but yeah.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. Like they've had some moments, but they've not looked good. The Capitals have had some moments, but I don't think overall they looked great. The Islanders have 5 goals in 3 games. Great stuff.
Sounds about right.
Devils are feisty, man. Devils are feisty.
Yeah. Outkicking their coverage a little bit. Boston's impossible to evaluate because Pasternak's not playing. And if there is one team that I'm looking at and saying, it's the Rangers. And when does the flame get turned up a little bit on Quinn in New York?
I think it's a legitimate question. Like, he's making some bizarre decisions with who plays on the power play. Like, he's putting Kako on the second unit some nights, and like, you know, the usual suspects were like Ryan Strome is getting looks on the first unit instead. Like, but on at the same time, like, okay, you know, famously he scratched Tony DeAngelo for not just maturity issues, but also his play, and who knows what percentage of each is an issue. But like, he can't also then scratch Jack Johnson and you know, like the other two defensemen, where it's like, oh, he's like a replacement level at best defender. Like, he's got to put them all somewhere, and so. I do on some level, like, I don't think he has a ton to work with, but I'm also, you know, not defending him by any means because I don't think he's doing a great job.
Now, is it true that he just simply didn't like the last episode of Watch Your Tone, the hit podcast that Tony DeAngelo does? Is that true or false? No? I think the issue with the Rangers is that every team comes to a point when they're building something where they say to themselves, okay, is the guy that's been behind the bench for the rebuild the guy that then takes us to the next level? And you could easily see
Jeff Blasil is somewhere right now.
right.
Feeling as if he's being talked about.
Yeah, like, you could easily see the Rangers looking at Quinn, who's a, you know, sort of cut from the Mike Sullivan cloth and a very accomplished college coach and stuff. And saying to themselves, all right, like, maybe we bring in one of them NHL experienced guys, somebody who's been there, quote unquote, to take over a extraordinarily talented but still green roster and get us to the next level. You could see that happening a mile away. If not this season, then the next season for the Rangers.
In the summer, yeah, absolutely.
The Scotia North Division. How you feeling about the Leafs, Sean?
I mean, 6 points in four games, that's fine. That'll do it. Have not looked fantastic. I mean, their loss came against Ottawa, who in theory they should be beating. They had to go to overtime against the Habs. Their last game against the Jets was their best, in the sense that it was kind of their most complete game, and they showed a little bit of defense. But I think so far the Leafs have been about what we thought. They can score. Still not sure on the defensive side. The thing with the Leafs, and this is this whole division, is every time I look at the Leafs, I'm like, yeah, but you know what? They haven't played any really great teams yet. And then I look at the division, and yeah, I'm like,
in June,
oh, right.
You're going to be like, yeah, they haven't played any great teams.
Yeah, right. It's like I'm literally going to get all through the season, and it's, you know, there's no... And we don't know. Like, Montreal has looked good. I'll give Montreal credit.
They really have.
They've looked good. So, you know, maybe certainly, you know, a month from now, we might say that, yeah, there is really good teams in this division. But for now, it's just kind of like, yeah, the Leafs on paper should be able to get points against all of these teams. So every loss is going to feel like, you know, feel like a missed opportunity, and that's fine. But yeah, they've been okay so far, but I don't think I'd give them a grade higher than that.
That sounds about right. The proper levels of optimism and concern that I think are commiserate with being a Leafs fan. Montreal looks better than I expected. I hope they miss the playoffs. So I look smart, but they're pretty good. And I'm very concerned about my sweet boys in Vancouver.
Yeah.
The COVID division, the Central.
No kidding.
Florida's undefeated.
Can't spell discover without COVID.
COVID. Yeah. Well
Switch,
done,
baby.
Florida's undefeated and will remain so at least through the weekend, apparently, I guess. I don't know. Bobrovsky looked like dog shit in his first game. Tampa's Tampa. Nashville got a couple wins over Columbus to start the season. They look pretty good. Carolina, before the COVID hit, they look pretty good. I don't know. Like, tough division to figure out until the reigning Western Conference champion starts playing. Yep. But sort of the way we thought it would go.
And that's the one I feel like we know the least about. Not just because of Dallas and Carolina missing games, but, you know, we haven't seen Tampa play one of the better teams. Florida has played Chicago, so you're sort of just waiting to see more on that one, because there is more separation in that division where you can start seeing some matchups where you're like, okay, this is good team against bad team, and this is good team against good team and bad against bad, and we'll start to see some figure out who goes where. But I don't really feel like we've got a good sense of that one, other than that it's going to be a long year for Chicago.
We didn't touch on the Pierre-Luc Dubois saga when we talked about Columbus earlier. There was a brief moment this week when he didn't play for a good stretch of the second period in Columbus's game. And the speculation was that John Tortorella had benched him. And John Tortorella's response to this was, "You'll know when I bench somebody, Brooksy." And so what do you think is going to happen with Dubois? Do you think that they do the "we're a better team with him, so he sticks around for this year, and then we move him in the offseason" bit? Or do you think that this is an untenable situation and he has to be moved in season?
Yeah, during that game against the Wings on Monday, like, NBC isn't normally one to like gin up this kind of scurrilous rumor mongering and all that kind of stuff, but like they showed from last year like a clip, or from the playoffs last year, a clip of Dubois coming back to the bench and Tortorella, you know, like pointing a finger in his face and getting right in his ear when he sat down on the bench and stuff, and they were like, "Yeah, I don't think the player and his representation liked that, you know?" And it's like, well, if they're even saying it on NBC, and then, like, later in that game, he's not playing for, like, 14 minutes of the second half of the game or whatever it was, like, that seems like it's not tenable, you know? But then again, he goes out and scores the game-winning goal in that game, if I'm not mistaken. And then you go, well, okay, fair enough. Maybe you need him, because if you don't have Pierre-Luc Dubois, like, who's putting the puck in the net at that point?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're like, at this point in the NHL, teams do not ever like to have the perception that they're being forced into a move. Everyone likes to do things on their own timetable. We're constantly told that even the smallest deal is so complicated and takes months and months to put together. So something like this, I mean, we're already, what's the trade deadline? Like 2 months away? Like, we're already within range. We'll start hearing that there just isn't time to put something like this together. I mean, the NBA can do 4-team trades in a day, but the NHL, apparently, it just takes a lot longer to figure out.
With a salary cap that is impossible to explain in under 2 hours.
Exactly. They can somehow figure it out, but not the NHL guys. So anyways, this is my way of saying they only move him if the situation becomes untenable. I don't think we're there yet. I think it's kind of up to Pierre-Luc Dubois whether we get there. And how much does he want to go? Is he willing to just kind of be the good soldier and with some assurance that he'll be moved in the offseason? Or does he maybe feel like we've got to push this a little bit further? I mean, we used to have... It used to be very common in the NHL that star players every year would just sit out and say, "I want to be traded and I'm not coming to work." And that doesn't happen anymore, partly because it just isn't allowed in the CBA. You can't, there isn't really an option for that. So I'm not suggesting that would ever happen, but whatever the modern equivalent of that is, I think the hand of the Blue Jackets could be forced, but I feel like that has to happen for them to make a move during the season. Well, not to mention all the other complications with just trading during this, you know, how do you trade when you're in a quarantine situation?
Well, the other thing to say, though, is that, you know, they've played four games, so you don't want to, but they've looked bad. And mm-hmm. the only team they've beaten is the Detroit Red Wings, a team that also beat them the next night. So, I mean, if they're not good this season, like, don't you just go, well, that's it, and you flip them at the deadline? Because I can't imagine, like, why drag them out at that point?
Yeah, yeah.
From a maximizing value perspective, that makes sense. From I'm an NHL GM, and I am not going to let some kid push me around and tell me this.
Yeah, but I'm just not talking to mention, more about, like, you know, just like you get to a point where it's like, okay, not only is the player not happy and he wants out, but also we're awful. And yeah. So, like, why drag this out any, you know, we all know what's going to happen. Let's just fucking do it.
There is also kind of an element here and where if you're Columbus, you're a small market, you lost two big free agents a year ago. Now you're, in theory, best player, doesn't want to be there. Like, at some point, you can't just have it be a revolving door. Where players know that, yeah, if you get drafted or you wind up in Columbus, you serve a few years and then you get out. Like, there might be a point where they say, you know, we gotta draw a line here, because otherwise, who's it? So what, we trade him for a first-round pick? That first-round pick turns into a star and we just do this again in a few years with someone else who wants out?
Again, this tracks back to Rick Nash. Like, this goes all the way back to the Rick Nash thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's in the DNA of the franchise.
I kind of don't think that's the same. Because, like, with Rick Nash, it was always like, well, we stink. Like, that the issue is we stink. And, like, having Rick Nash here is, like, you know, just wasting his career. Versus, you know, Panarin and Bobrovsky leave, and it's like, well, they wanted to go to bigger markets, or, you know, they didn't like the coach, whatever it is. And now with Dubois, it's like, well, it seems like he wants to go to a bigger market and doesn't like the coach. Well, you can't fix the market problem. And you know what I mean? Like, at what point do you go, you know what, being able to grind out all these 2-1 shootout wins and make the playoffs – if it's costing us all these star players, like, at what point is Tortorella hockey? Like, I think he's turned himself into a very good coach again, but at what point is it not worth it if this is the way he's going to coach and piss off all your best players? Because the other thing, Pierre McGuire was, like, raving about, oh, you know, Mike Delzato loves playing for John Tortorella, and it's like, well, I guess they found the guy. They found the one guy who's like, it actually rules to get yelled at all the time.
All right, last thing on Dubois. Where would you fantasy cast him? I mean, obviously there are complications if you wanted to send him to Montreal, which I think is where a lot of people think he should end up. There's a lot of complications.
Yeah,
there,
I mean, he'd have to play behind, like, the four surefire Hall of Fame centers that they already have.
It's very
Have you heard? I mean,
There's also, like, six more that play the wing that'll be centers at some point. But,
yeah.
There's that. The Rangers are a really interesting spot, but I do wonder, as Capo and Lafreniere get older and you paid a lot of money on that Trouba contract, like, there's money that you're going to have to give out in the next couple of years, and you're already paying some guys some pretty hefty salaries. I think they could make it work, but I don't know.
And the other thing is, you know, we're all big on this because it's very rare for young stars to get moved in the league. But what is Pierre-Luc Dubois actually? Like, is he a number one center you build a franchise around, or is he like Ryan Johansson? Is he a perfectly serviceable second line center guy that can be good on, can help a team, but you don't blow up? You know, if you're the Rangers, you're not going, this is the missing piece that we bring in to be our
But I 100% agree, Sean. He's a good player who had a really good playoff. And now everybody's like, well, if you just get him out of Columbus, he's going to turn into fucking Joe Thornton. You know, like,
there's he hasn't given us any indication he's going to be like an 80 or 90 point guy. Now, 60 or 70 points, who can play two way and is a big guy, like, that's, I'm not saying that's a bad player. I'm not even saying that can't be a number one center. Is that, if you're a team that views yourself as a Stanley Cup contender down the line, is that the guy that you're willing to pay the assets and then in a year pay the salary that's presumably going to be number one center money? Is that your guy? Maybe it is, because, I mean, who else is going to become available? But I don't know.
I think he's if we're going to Craig Custance this and put him into tiers, he's not on the Connor Austin level. Is he one tick down on the Braden Point level?
No.
Probably not.
No, I don't think so.
Is he on the next tier beyond that?
Who would you put in that tier?
To me, he's kind of already on like the Mika Zibanejad level, which...
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Zibanejad scored 40 fucking goals last year.
So he may not even be there.
Dubois had, what, 18? I think he had around 20.
I think he might be on the Zibanejad level, but you could make the argument that he's lower than that.
I think he's definitely lower than that. And again,
is he better than William Karlsson? Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. I'll just say this. I'm not knocking the guy. And I'm not saying clearly if he's going to be traded, you pick up the phone and you get in on that. When it comes to like, hey, we need a center, if you want to know what happens if you keep going out and getting second line centers, ask the Nashville Predators how that strategy works.
Absolutely. No, I think the Johansson comp is so good. I think because that's a guy who he had one incredible season for Columbus, and everybody's like, well, this is a future number one center, one of the best in the league. And like, he's good, and that's it. And there's nothing wrong with being just good. And Ryan Johansson has proven you can get real rich being just good. But, you know, if Nashville has a chance to do over that contract, don't you think they pull the trigger on that?
Mm-hmm.
No. So, yeah, by year three, Johansson had hit 33 goals too. So
Now here's the flip side. And then, you know, we can leave it on this as a positive. If you want to, you know, I'm sitting here going, do you go out and get a center who's a two-way guy, 60 points? Is that really what you want? Ask the Blues how it worked out with Ryan O'Reilly. That's the flip side of going out and getting a guy like that.
Dubois got a real, I think, well-rounded game. That's only going to get better. I mean, he's still real young. So I do think from that aspect, he's better than Johansson.
Yeah, if you want to say he's a Ryan O'Reilly, Patrice Bergeron light, that checks out for me. You know, like the Coke Zero version of those guys, sure, you know, but is that?
Let me ask you this question: if you were the Canucks and the Blue Jackets came to you and said Dubois for Bo Horvat straight up, do you do that trade?
No.
Okay, so that's where he is tier wise. He's below Bo Horvat.
Yeah, I think that's right.
We've established this. Okay.
I would say he's like in the top 20 to 25 centers in the league, maybe. Maybe. And
in a 31 team league.
Yeah, but like that's still a number one center on a handful of teams. And there's nothing wrong with being that guy.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with it at all. Where do you think he ends up, Ryan?
I already said it. I think Vegas is just that they always seem to fucking do it. Why wouldn't this be another opportunity for them to do it?
It's a very good point. Speaking of Vegas, today's episode of Puck Soup is sponsored by MyBookie.
Pretty good.
You know, MyBookie's got all kinds of hockey bets for you. I love betting team totals. If you've seen me on Daily Wager, there's at least one or twice a week when I am on a team total. I think it's one of the bets that you can kind of glean a little bit based on how teams are going. Maybe you take a look at how their power play is trending. Maybe you take a look at what goaltender they're going against. You could bet that on MyBookie, but MyBookie wants you to know that the NFL playoffs are here. And this is where a lot of people are laying a lot of money. You've waited and watched all year as your team rose to the top or fell to the bottom, but now it's your turn to win big. You've heard the name just about everywhere, MyBookie. They're the industry's leading online sportsbook and casino, and it's hard not to understand why. With thousands of lines to bet on your favorite sports, NFL, NBA, college ball, MMA, NHL. Take advantage of MyBookie's prop builder and live in-game betting where every single run, throw, touchdown, and goal is another chance for you to put cash in your pocket. Visit their mobile-friendly website today and get your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. Wow. Just use the promo code PUCK, P-U-C-K, when you make your first deposit. The best part is that they make it simple with a variety of ways to deposit instantly, including credit cards, bank transfers, and Ryan Lambert, Bitcoin.
Whoa.
Whether you're at home or on the go, on your laptop or on your phone, it's not too late to make your New Year's resolution a resolution to get paid. Again, get your first deposit matched halfway to $1,000 with promo code PUCK. Head over to mybookie.ag or just search around for mybookie. Could go either way. Bet, win, and get paid at mybookie. We need to talk about let's talk about COVID for a second, just to, you know, bring the room down. The Dallas Stars will play their first game, scheduled to play their first game, we should say, on Friday. Carolina's had a couple of cancellations. Are we at where you thought we'd be with this stuff, or are we a bit ahead of schedule with this stuff?
Yeah, it's interesting. The NBA, it took like a month for it all to catch up with everybody, but also like they didn't have a team testing positive like even before the season started. So maybe I guess I would say they are kind of right on schedule, games getting moved around and that kind of thing. It's not, you were never going to avoid it, so whatever.
Yeah, you would have hoped that we go a little bit longer, but we knew this was coming, and there's maybe something to be said for getting it out of the way and getting the first ones out of the way so we could all sort of, anyone who still needed to adjust their thinking of how the season was going to go could do that. The Carolina one's interesting. They've had the one game moved. We're all expecting more. The team I'm kind of watching is Nashville, because Nashville yep. played Carolina the night before, and you're kind of sitting there going, well, what does that look like? And that's one of the things we always wondered. This isn't the NFL where you've got a week between games. This is, you're playing every second night for the most part. So any team that has an outbreak is probably going to have had an opponent who that just came through town or that they were just visiting. So far, from what I've seen, so good with Nashville, but maybe by the time people hear this, that might have changed, or maybe not. But that's kind of the fingers crossed thing is, do we, because that's what you can't have if you're the NHL. One team having to move a few games, we can work with, but having it bounce around the league just because of how the schedule moved teams around is the disaster that hasn't happened yet. But let's hope we don't see anything about the Predators come down.
Yeah, I think I want to believe that some of this is them being overly cautious when it comes to the exposure and things like that. And one of the other things too, and I don't think the NHL has done a really good job explaining this. I know, shocker, but just because you're on the COVID list doesn't mean you have COVID. Yeah. I think it's really important to stress, because I've noticed that in the listing of people that are on that list, there are a lot of fans, at least on social media, that are getting confused by it. This is if you have an initial positive test, which remains unconfirmed, mandated isolation for symptomatic individuals, required quarantine as a high risk close contact in accordance with the positive test protocol, or isolation based on confirmed positive test, or quarantine for travel. So like there's five different ways you end up on
that
this
are
list.
Very, very different. Like that.
Yeah, and in some cases, very loose, right? So,
yeah,
like,
because we've seen guys go on the list one day and then come off, and I can understand why some fans would be looking at that going, wait a second, did he have a positive test? How is he off the list? Well, because it probably wasn't that. And again, I just wonder, I get that the NHL is trying to walk a line here and respect privacy and all of that, but I just wonder if sometimes when you're intentionally unclear, it just does more harm than good.
Well, I mean, we saw that last summer with the fucking unfit to play bullshit. So
yeah, yeah. And kudos to the league for not going back to that. Like they're allowing a little more light onto this, but compared to, I believe Ryan can let us know, like the NBA, I think, is being a lot more straightforward. I know the NFL was.
Yep. Yeah, it's weird because I think. you know, the NHL is doing a good thing by just being like extra cautious, and it's like, you know what, even if you have a close contact, you're in the COVID protocol, that all makes perfect sense. But yeah, I wonder, you know, I don't think that would like necessarily get abused where like a team's like, oh yeah, yeah, you know, we're trying to dodge the salary cap by putting a guy in the COVID protocol or whatever. But yeah, the lack of clarity around it is just like, I don't know what the answer to why, you know, why is this guy out? Well, he's in the COVID protocol. Well, what does that mean? Well, let's just say he's in the COVID protocol, and yeah. you just end up, you know, it's like this really recursive thing where you're just back to saying, hey, my hands are tied here. That's it. And okay.
And to be clear, the list that comes out every night can be any of those things. Teams aren't canceling games because of close contact or whatever. Like, this is, we can assume that there have been multiple probably positive tests when you see something like this. So it's a confusing situation.
On the cancellation of games, what struck me about Carolina canceling its game, or postponing, we should call it, was, you know, not only was it five players, but it also was Teravainen, who's a top liner or at best top six, Jordan Staal, who's been on the list for a little bit, and Jacob Slavin, who's, you know, in my estimation, their most important defenseman.
Poor Doug Hamilton doesn't get the fucking respect he deserves.
Who plays with fucking Slavin? So and that's, by the way, a reference to last season. I don't know who Dougie Hamilton's playing with this season. I haven't watched much of the Hurricanes. Neither of you
haven't had a chance.
They all got COVID. So I what struck me about it was these were really important players. Now, we've seen in the NFL this sort of like unsympathetic, we don't care if all of your quarterbacks have COVID stance, right? You're going to go ahead and play. And so they don't have a care about how important the players are that have it or can't play. NBA, we've seen big name players out and they play on. I thought maybe there was something to the fact that these were key players that were out. But I checked in with an NHLPA source, and they're like, that's probably not how the protocol is working. Like, it's just going to be the doctors saying there's enough at-risk people that they shouldn't play. But should it work like that? Should there be a dispensation if like, both of your goalies, say, like, have COVID, and you have to play the third stringer? I mean, should it work like that, or should it not work like that?
That's why you have a taxi squad, though, right?
Yeah, like, that's and how do you start making those calls? And you just open yourself up, even if you make them in a fair way, people are still going to complain that, oh, well, we had to play with this guy, but
yep,
this team. Yeah. I think you have to do it the way the NFL did, where it's, hey, you are responsible for having a team. There's probably a sense where it's, yeah, there's got to be some minimums. You have to have an X number of players available. And realistically, there's not really a realistic scenario where six players on your team could test positive, but everyone else is okay to play. Like, there is a tipping point after a couple of players where it's not going to work. But I don't think the league can get into that, you know, at least for now. And maybe what happens in the playoffs?
Yeah.
Not to think too far ahead. That's going to be
well. I also like Greg's foray into trying to get into the Edmonton media sphere by being like, well, what if both goalies? I mean, it's crazy, right?
Yeah, we shouldn't play until the goaltending improves, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right, let's spend a little bit of time on Mike Babcock. Not a lot. We already talked about this after the NBC press conference debacle, but a little bit of time. I'm assuming we all read it. Start with you, Sean. What was your opinion of the Mike Babcock attempt at image repair?
Yeah, this is it. He finally gave his first interview. He gave it to Pierre LeBrun at The Athletic, where I work. So, you know, take whatever, however many grains of salt you need to have on what I might be about to say. I mean, I don't think if the goal here was that this is to be image repair, I'm not sure it's mission accomplished, because it's certainly a lot of the reaction, at least that I saw, was not overly positive. The focus was on two situations, the Mitch Marner situation and then the Franzen situation, which is, of the two, the far more serious in terms of what's being being suggested. I thought his reaction to the Marner thing was actually fine. He basically said, hey, look, it didn't happen exactly the way the perception is out there, but I screwed up, I own it, it's on me. That's about what I think you want on something like this. It was the Franzen thing where it was he at least as it was presented, it created a perception where Mike Babcock was almost considering himself a victim, seemed to accept that something had gone wrong and that he had done wrong, but then kind of went right into his own mental health advocacy and that sort of thing, which is worth mentioning and can be part of the story, but it seemed as if, it just felt to me like there was a PR script there of saying, hey, when it comes to the Franzen situation, I screwed up, I was wrong, I didn't handle it properly, and that is particularly, especially hard on me because I'm aware of the importance of these issues, et cetera, et cetera. And that first part kind of got skipped over, and mm-hmm. It went right to, I'm an advocate, I'm this, I'm that, and missed the part of, hey, this is where I acknowledge that I've done something wrong.
Yeah, he's in a hot dog suit going, we got to figure out who did this.
Yeah, it's hard to read. You know, that really hurt me. You know, mm-hmm. when I was accused of hurting somebody, I'm just like, yeah, but what about the person you hurt?
Yeah, like, that's the fucking point. I get kind of where it's coming from, because if he hadn't talked about any of that stuff, there would be people reading this saying, does he even understand what this means and what, you know, what it means to somebody to in their mental health and everything? And I think he was trying to make it clear that, yes, I do understand this. I have seen this in people close to me, and you know, I'm aware. But again, it felt like there was too much emphasis on that and not enough on what had actually happened and who it impacted. And I mean, look, there are a lot of hockey fans out there who are done with Mike Babcock, no matter what he says. I mean, there was nothing he could say that wouldn't get a reaction of, it's not enough, and get rid of this guy. There's also a lot of hockey fans that are absolutely willing to forgive and forget, and they don't understand why this was even an issue, and let's just get Mike Babcock back behind a bench, and all's good. And they were going to give the thumbs up to anything he said, no matter how inadequate. I think whatever group of fans were maybe undecided or maybe waiting to hear from them, like I said, I don't think this is a step that he had to do before he goes back on TV like nothing happened. But if the idea here was to open the doors back up, I'm not sure it does it in the eyes of a lot of fans. I'm sure it probably does it in the eyes of a lot of GMs in the league who probably were in that second group that were ready to forgive and forget no matter what, as long as he did something like this. But I can't imagine too many people who are on the fence that are now convinced that this guy's good to go.
Yeah, because he fucked up. Like, all he had to do was be contrite. And all he had to do was show that moment of baseline self-reflection necessary to repair his image.
That's not all he had to do, because he is contrite. He is, or at least he's showing some amount of that. Whether it's sincere or not is up to people to decide. I don't think that's all he had to do. I don't think there was like that the bar was very low here. I think the bar was set pretty high. I don't think he clears it is the issue. But I don't buy the idea that this was an easy one to do and he just blew it. I think it was going to be a challenge no matter how he came at it.
We talked about it before. It's very easy. You just say, the tactics that I used when I coached were wrong. I understand that now. And if I am blessed to coach in this league again, I'm not going to do it the same way. Like, I understand what I did to Johan Franzen is wrong. I understand what I did to a lot of other players is wrong. Like, it was easy. That was the only thing he needed to do.
If he had said those exact words, I don't think the conversation today is all that much different.
Oh, I completely disagree. If he doesn't go and spill a bunch of fucking word salad all over The Athletic and instead goes and does a TV interview with TSN where he talks to Drager on camera and says, the way I coached was not the way that I will coach again, and that, you know, I've learned the error of my ways. I mean, fuck, that is a billion times different than stumbling around and trying to make himself the victim. I mean, it is night and day, Sean.
It would be better. It would be better. I'm just saying, I think that
a lot of the people would absolutely
still be seeing the same articles and the same tweets and the same everything saying this is not sufficient, because for a lot of people, and maybe rightly so, there wasn't anything that he was going to say that was, but I agree with you that that would have been better. I don't necessarily think it would have made that much of a difference, right or wrong.
What did you think, Ryan?
Yeah, just all that. There was, you know, I was definitely ready for him to. I mean, the fact that it took this long, I wasn't exactly holding my breath that he was going to be like, you know what, I figured out exactly what the issue is. Here's what I did to fix it. Blah blah blah. I didn't have any illusions about that. I thought he might do the thing of like, well, look, when I was in the league, this is how we did it. So that when I became a coach, this is how I did it. And, you know, you do see a lot of coaches go, well, look, you can't talk to players today the way. And even again, to go back to the Pierre Maguire thing, he's like, you know what? Like, a lot of players used to get coached this way and players today don't like to be coached that way. And maybe you have to change with the times and blah, blah, blah. And I think that, you know, I certainly would have been more willing to give him the benefit of the doubt of like, well, you know what? I don't know that I want him behind the bench immediately or anything like that. But if the opportunity presents itself and like he really does seem to like, you know, with these quotes he's giving, like, understand, because that's the other thing, like, maybe he's just not the best spoken guy. You know what I mean? I think that's fine.
Which is why he has a TV job now, obviously.
Right. Well, you know, again, these are hockey players. Well, you know, you just go hard to the net, you know, head down, just fortunate enough to be there. All the credit to my line mates, all that shit. Like, I'm not saying Mike Babcock went through a bunch of public speaking classes and this was the result is all I'm saying. And so I was willing to even give him the benefit of the doubt of – you know what? Even if he doesn't say the exact right thing, if he just kind of generally comes across as "quote unquote" getting it, I'd be willing to give him, or more willing to be like, you know what? Take another crack at it. You know, you spent a lot of years as a highly respected coach. Like, I don't know that this should preclude you from ever coaching in hockey again. You know, like, as bad as it was, I feel like he should have gotten a second crack at it. But now I go, oh, I think he didn't fucking get it, really.
Yeah. You know? That's where I am on it, too. So, the two things that stood out for me were, one, the part where Pierre does ask if he's going to change anything, you know, before his next job. And, you know, Babcock's response is, well, you know, you change a lot from job to job. You change as a person. You change as a coach. I mean, and you're thinking, okay, well, maybe he's going to get into the whole, like, error of my ways thing. And it just, oh, you know, you learn you got to take the F3 on the forecheck and move him over to the, you know, like, it was like goddamn coach speak instead of actually, like, being a human, which made me nuts. And the other thing was, at one point, instead of being like, yeah, I'm going to be a different guy, I'm going to coach differently, he actually suggests maybe the solution to all this is that there's a handler that tells him when he's gone over the line.
Yeah, exactly. Like that,
like
that,
a babysitter.
That was the big one of like, look, I just need someone to tell me when I'm being too mean to everybody. And it's like,
that's insane.
No, I don't think that's how it works, dude. Like, that's.
Oh, that was rough. That was rough. All right. Well, he'll probably be on TV this weekend, so you can watch the wit and wisdom of Mike Babcock. I hope NBC had the good sense of hiring Nick Lidstrom to sit next to him so Babcock could be successful on television.
Oh, boy.
But
very good.
We'll see.
Hey, that's not fair. Nick Lidstrom didn't play for the Canadian Olympic team. Sidney Crosby
That's true,
did.
Too.
Patrice Bergeron did. Doughty did. Peak of his powers. Yeah,
he needs to be on a panel with Sidney Crosby, Nick Lidstrom, and J.S. Jaguar. And then we're good. Then he'll never be bad. In better, more entertaining news, Jakub Voracek had a press availability recently.
That's true.
In which Philadelphia Inquirer columnist Mike Sielski, I'm going to guess it is. Sure, why not? Asked him a question about the game the Flyers had played. And Jake said, "Does it matter what I say, Mike? You're going to write fucking shit every time, so it doesn't matter what you say." And I think the question was, like, does it feel different playing in front of an empty crowd or something? He goes, "Yeah, it feels different. I mean, we got 4 points out of these first two games. I wasn't even going to answer your question because you are such a weasel. It's not even funny. Next question." First off,
Bobby Heenan
boys,
rolling in his grave.
I was going to say, best use of weasel since Bobby Heenan, without question. And then he next questioned him at the end of that answer. So Sielski did an interview with Crossing Broad in which he kind of indicated where he thinks the root of some of this is. And apparently he wrote a column in 2019. The Flyers were off to a slow start. Alain Vigneault was talking. He said he needs more from his veteran players. He's saying this during practice. And he noted that Voracek and James Van Riemsdyk were laughing as Vigneault was speaking. And he put that in the column. And so he puts out the column on the website, and he said Flyers public relations got in touch because they thought I was writing that Voracek and Van Riemsdyk were laughing at Alain Vigneault. So I apologized and said that I could understand why they saw it that way. I went online and we fixed the column at that point to clarify that I didn't know specifically what they were talking about. And I said I'd be willing to smooth things over with Jake and that I would speak to him at practice or over the phone. We fixed the column and yada, yada, yada. So that's where he thinks the root of all this is. Although people showed, what, 36 tweets in which this guy dragged
Voracek. Yeah, and
Voracek.
Like screenshots from columns where, you know, he was basically giving the Voracek like the mid-2000s Joe Thornton in Boston treatment where it's like we all just decided he's the problem but this was like a one-man campaign and then, you know, Jake Voracek himself, I think, said that – or like maybe tweeted that like he had, you know, had many opportunities to talk to him in the dressing room and like never even made eye contact with him or something like that. So it's just a case of like a guy wrote something that a player didn't like and probably was maybe going a little overboard and criticizing that player in addition to all that, maybe even before that. And so Jake Voracek was like, "I don't fucking like this guy."
Hmm.
Yeah, which he has the right to do and to feel. And there's, as people have pointed out, there are ways to deal with this typically in a media player relationship. And some of those ways are not available right now, and maybe that's, you know, this is the sort of thing where they should have just hashed it out after practice one day and none of us would know about it, and you can't do that. So I don't know. I don't know the whole background. I'm not interested in the whole soap opera of whether Voracek's right or wrong to feel that way. I've said this before. I think it's garbage when players do this. I think it's garbage when coaches do it, John Tortorella, whoever. The media screws up often. The media is absolutely fair game for complaint and criticism and all the rest of this. But publicly trying to embarrass somebody in front of not only all their colleagues, but, you know, in this case, however many people are watching, I think is a garbage move. I think even if it's justified, I mean, if the waiter screws up your order, it's okay to be mad. But if you stand up and start dropping F-bombs in front of them, at them in front of everyone, you're being a jerk.
Yeah.
Even if they screwed up, you're being a jerk right now. Don't do that. And I think it's the same when a player or whoever acts like this in this situation. And I'm not a fan. I'm not going to sit here and pretend it's hilarious the way that apparently we all do. I get why it's a story. I get why it's entertaining. I get why people notice it. But when people are like, oh, this is hilarious. No, there's nothing funny about this. He's not making jokes. He's trying to humiliate somebody he doesn't like, in a situation, where justified or not, like find a way to deal with it like a grown up. That's what I would like to see.
I don't have a problem with a player popping off on the media. I think it's a one-way conversation so often when it comes to criticism that if they want to pop off and whatever, that's fine. I've seen it happen. It's happened to me. It's fine. What I didn't like about this is the Zoom muscles aspect of it. Like, if you want to pop off on somebody because he's right in front of your face with a microphone in the locker room, or if he's staring right in front of you at a press conference, it's a bit different than doing it when you're separated by fucking miles and
it's
computers.
A little bit different when it's Larry Brooks can tell you to go piss up a rope right back to your face versus this situation.
Versus the PR guy hitting the button and cutting you off. You know, like there's been a little Zoom muscling, I think, in the last year with NHL players and coaches and the way that they've handled these press conferences.
I agree, Greg. They're all cowards. Wyshynski said that.
That's right. Journalists are sports writers are the brave ones. Players are cowards. But there's always that aspect though, Ryan, where, you know, when you write something critical of somebody, there's always the,
I've never done that. I don't know what you're talking about.
There's always that, would you go to the locker room and say that to his face? And I mean, I would turn it around on Voracek. Like, I assume that he would say it to this dude's face, but he didn't. He did it over Zoom. He dunked them on him during Zoom. So while I don't think it necessarily needed the NHL, watchdogging that apparently happened behind the scenes where they talked to him and stuff about his behavior, I do think there's something to be said for like this whole thing occurring in a socially distanced way versus the way it probably should occur, which is either one-on-one.
They should have to wrestle. I agree.
In the locker room. I think that'd be awesome, personally.
No shirts.
The most famous thing I was ever there in person for was I was there for the Larry Brooks Dan Boyle thing when Dan Boyle retired or like played his last game and literally said that he wouldn't he wouldn't talk to the media until Brooks left the locker room, which I know wasn't the favorite of a lot of people, but it was surreal to be in that moment. All right. Anything else to talk about hockey-wise? I feel like we've kind of gone through it.
Yeah, I'm trying to I guess not.
Yeah. Oh, I wanted to bring up something basketball-wise. This struck me when you were talking about the NBA before. I watched my first Nets game in a minute.
Boy,
with,
they look
with
fucking
Hart-
good, don't they? Jesus
They're
Christ.
So fucking good. I mean, Harden looks, you know, revitalized, and Durant's just next level.
Ooh, Durant looks so good this year. Somebody on Twitter said it this morning. He's been a treat to watch.
He's really been incredible. And then, you know, Kyrie's coming back too. So it's going to be one of the best teams, if not the best team in basketball.
There's only one ball out there, Greg. That's what they are.
And I heard Charles Barkley say the other day that he's like, I'm a little bit worried about the rebounding. So there you go. So maybe the rebounding is a problem too. But here's the thing. I've been a Nets fan all my life. I have lived and died with this team in many ways.
Never heard you mention them once, but okay, continue.
I have you have to remember that for a good stretch of us talking like on
this
podcast.
Yeah, they were terrible.
And
I understand.
Not only were they terrible, but they had no future. They traded away their future to Boston.
Yeah, like, I remember.
I divorced myself from the Nets for a good number of years because of that trade and how fucking terrible it was. That said, like, you know, I'm a Nets fan. You know, I grew up going to games. I grew up where it was me and my dad and a bunch of Michael Jordan fans watching the Nets lose to the Bulls by 50 points. Like, it was, you know, I was at those games. I went on Drazen Petrovic night when they raised his number to the rafters. Like, I'm a Nets fan. My problem is that I don't really know how to be this kind of Nets fan or NBA fan. like my fandom is very much tied to your player drafts, your team drafts players, and you watch them suck, and then they get good, and maybe they go outside the organization, and they get more good players, and they join the players that are the core of the team. Like the real traditional kind of...
You're used to being the Columbus Blue Jackets of the NBA.
Well, yeah, or even, you know, back in the day when the Nets went and got...
Jason Kidd
and Vince Carter.
Yeah.
Like, it was still also Richard Jefferson was there, and guys like Kerry Kittles were there. Like, there were always... that homegrown aspect that were real important contributors to the team on top of the stars that they went out and got. I'm not used to this NBA fandom that has certainly been in vogue for since LeBron took his talents to Miami, where just a bunch of guys show up on your team one day and are like, all right, this is our team now.
Yeah, and you just start fucking yamming on the entire Eastern Conference. Absolutely. It's very strange. That can just happen out of nowhere. The same thing with the Clippers, where they, you know, they went from being the fucking LA Clippers to they had, you know, the what were they, Splash Town or whatever they were calling themselves back then, like when Blake Griffin was first coming into the league.
Yeah.
And they went out and got a bunch of really good players. So
your team becomes a vessel for empowered free agents to just like show up and play there. Like it's not even like you're, that's what your franchise becomes. It's not we're building towards something and now you're the final piece of that puzzle. It's like you're the puzzle and you've just and we're just a table for you to construct.
Yeah, I mean,
your puzzle.
I think a lot of that you it just goes back to, wow, they're in Brooklyn and New York City now as opposed to North Jersey.
Right,
which makes them certainly a destination for a lot of guys. But yeah, I mean, you know, you can kind of build a super team like they did it in fucking Cleveland with Kyrie, LeBron, and Kevin Love, and they won a title. Like, you know, not that San Francisco is like fucking Cleveland or whatever, but San Francisco, Oklahoma City had a super team for a while with Westbrook and Harden and Durant.
Right.
So, you know, it can just if teams do the right maneuvering and free up enough cap space, they can go out and get three of the 25 best players in the world.
So I guess my question is this: as a lifelong fan of the franchise, like I'll be very happy if they win the NBA title. That'd be great. I've never seen my team do it. I've seen my team lose in the finals twice, but I've never seen my team win the NBA title. But like, what does that even mean? Like, I don't have any emotional connection to Durant, Harden, and Kyrie at all. Like, they're very entertaining players. I'm happy they're on my team. But it's not going to feel the same way as like the Devils winning the cup.
Well, let's put it this way: you think the Golden State Warriors fans who didn't exist before 6 years ago give a shit? Like it's a little different because obviously.
But how did they build that team though? Yeah, they built that team through drafting and developing.
Okay, right. A better example: you think Lakers fans give a shit about this?
Yeah, but they're Lakers fans.
Fair enough.
I'll just tell you, man. I'm not a basketball guy, but as the you know, quote unquote fan of a team that went and traded for a guy who got airlifted in for 1 year, won a championship and then left, didn't care. It was still pretty awesome. You'll be fine.
But weren't most of the Raptors homegrown though?
Yeah,
around him?
Went out and got Kyrie. Yes, but I guess another good example
Kawhi.
Is the Boston Celtics from you know the original Big Three era. They had Paul Pierce, but they went out and got Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett, and then they were
right.
Like, oh yeah, we're fucking unbelievable now after years of being like, well, Paul Pierce is good, and nobody in Boston is like, this has actually been you know, sullied by the fact that we had to go out and get Kevin fucking Durant or
Sully didn't believe it was sullied, is what you're trying to say?
No, he didn't. It definitely didn't.
But there's different degrees to it. Like, there's the homegrown team, and then there's the team that has the one great star, and then it's like, we've got to surround this guy with better players. And that was kind of the Paul Pierce Garnett thing. And then there's what's happening with the Nets, which is that we are dog shit.
Out of whole cloth.
Yeah, we're just making a team out of whole cloth.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I honestly, as a fan, I don't know how to feel about this. Like, you know, there was a certain satisfaction to seeing your team build something and win a championship. And in this case, it's just that we had the cap space and the money and like you said, the location.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to give a shit when they win. Because then if they do it next year, it's like, hey, the Nets from last year, they won a title again. Crazy. And they fucking very well could. I don't know what the contract status on all those guys are, but I think they're kind of for a while. So, yeah, they're gonna be hooping on the fucking Eastern Conference for at least 2 years.
That'd be great. And maybe my emotional connection with the team changes because of that. But there's also a part of me that's like, you know, acknowledges the nomadic existence of the NBA star. And then what if it's just like, all right, maybe Kyrie has another friend he wants to play with, you know, on some other team.
And you couldn't be surprised by that. He's, you know, he fucking just like left the team for a couple of weeks there. Whatever.
Right. Yeah.
Gives a shit.
Like I just feel like from year to year, it's not even a situation of like, oh, I, you know, this franchise means something to me.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, right, where are my friends?
Again, Lakers fans aren't like, well, at least like Kyle Kuzma was involved in us winning a title. They're like, we have fucking LeBron and AD. Who gives a shit? We won a title with like two unbelievable players.
I mean, that goes back to Shaq. I mean, you know, they fucking bought in Shaq to be the a centerpiece of the team.
Well, yeah, I think the Kobe stans are going to be coming for you now for saying that Shaq was the centerpiece of those teams. But
look, we all know Shaq made Kobe. At least that's what Shaq said. I think that was in one of his Shaq Fu songs that he made Kobe. All right. We should finish up with a little overrated, underrated this week. It's a couple
guys
of different
on
options.
The Nets. Uh-oh.
Okay. Let's see. All time, least favorite, Keith Van Horn. Man, what a bust. The Great White Hype. Do you have a favorite basketball player of all time, Sean?
No. Trying to think even who. I mean, it would probably just be the big names. My main basketball experience has been being pretending to be a fan of the Bulls back when everybody was doing that. Mm. Being really into NBA Jam for a summer. And then the Raptors in 2019. That's pretty much
proven. Sounds like he's a big Kyrie guy then.
My favorite net of all time is Petrovic. My favorite player of all time, it might have been Barkley. I fucking loved watching Barkley play.
Yep.
He was so fun to watch.
Sir Charles like, himself, the amount, amount of rebound. Many years.
Yeah, and a guy built like a shit brick house in a league where everybody was built like, you know, Olajuwon.
Yeah.
It was fucking fun as shit to watch him play. And also, you know, the greatest example I think of all time of a guy who played and everybody was like, this guy's going to kick ass when he goes on television. And then lo and behold, he kicked ass when he went on television. The anti-Ronick, if you will.
Yeah. It's the same with Shaq, where everybody was like, boy, I can't wait till he's done. And he goes on TV and is just like instantly, this guy's a fucking star. I knew it.
This guy's a star. Yeah, he's tremendous.
Anybody who saw Blue Chips would have known that, though. Boy, oh boy.
What a flick. What's the best basketball movie of all time? Is it Hoosiers?
I think that's what people would say.
Hoosiers and Hoop Dreams is the other
Hoop
one.
Dreams is
Hoop Dreams without question.
But yeah, if we're not counting documentaries. Yeah,
Teen Wolf.
I mean, Hoosiers is really good, but also like maybe it's a bit overstated at this point. What I watched over the summer that I'd never seen before is Love and Basketball, which is
great movie,
fantastic.
Yeah.
White
Men Can't Jump has to be in there somewhere.
White Men Can't Jump rocks. Yep. That's so good.
That movie where one of the Wayans brothers is a ghost and helps
Sixth Man.
Yeah. Obviously. The one where Kevin Bacon goes to Africa to recruit a player.
The Air Up There.
Yeah. I always get that confused with the George Clooney movie, the Up in the Air.
This should be like our new thing. We just vaguely describe basketball movies. The one where Whoopi Goldberg is the coach?
Eddie?
I think so. The one where they kidnap Damon Wayans?
Celtic Pride.
There it is.
Oh, the one where they play the Monstars?
Oh, that's a tough one. I don't know that one off the top of my head.
The one where the teen becomes a wolf.
Another tough one.
You know, I was never big on semi-pro. People like semi-pro.
It has its Will Ferrell movie.
I just think it's such an inferior sports movie to Talladega Nights. If we're going Will Ferrell sports movie genre. Yeah.
The correct answer, by the way, for the best basketball movie I saw recently, The Way Back. It's fucking great. The Affleck.
I still haven't watched that.
Coach. It's so good.
Yeah.
He's unbelievable in it. I love it.
Hmm. Is there a scene where he puts a giant cardboard cutout of his girlfriend in a garbage can outside of his house because he's hit rock bottom?
No, that's a okay. different thing.
That's a different thing?
Yeah. Okay. And this is a fire in a barrel. That's from Mighty Ducks 2. Sorry, D2, the Mighty Ducks are back.
D2, the Mighty Ducks. Please get it right. But Patrick Sharp dropped a fucking Team Iceland reference on NBC last night during the game. I was really impressed.
That's freaking epic.
Way too hip for the room. Overrated, underrated, favorite, least favorite. The two that struck my fancy. One was TV theme songs, which was actually put forth by a few people. I don't know how you feel about that.
Well, what's the other one?
The other one is from our friend Stephen King, not the author.
Oh, I was going to say. Dolores Claiborne.
He's like... Creepy Things in Derry. Vacation Destinations was Steven's suggestion.
Let's do TV one.
Yeah, Vacation okay. just seems cruel at this point.
Yeah, taunting us.
My Backyard.
My Den. All right, TV theme songs. So we go overrated TV theme song.
Brady Bunch.
Oh, told the whole story of the show.
And I like a theme song that does that. I just think it's – I don't think it tells the whole story. I think they go, you know what? The setup for the show is entirely in the theme song. Like you don't like see the parents meet. You don't see them moving in together. It's all just like joined in progress, and it's like, oh, we all live together already. You didn't see the first 38 seconds of the show.
I've never heard the Brady Bunch described as being in media res, but
it
you're
is
right.
In media
you just kind
res.
Of just dive right into it. do you have an overrated theme song, Sean?
Yeah, Friends.
Oh, good wow. Call. Spicy take. You know,
it's fine, but it's the fact that they then had to go and turn it into a real song and, you know, all that. Like,
well,
you know,
no, it was
we all
the
like,
opposite.
We all like the clapping part.
It was the opposite.
No, I don't think it was. I think it was a theme song first, and then they went and like made a second verse and everything so they could put it out there.
I think you might be right. I kind of recall that.
I could be wrong, but that's the story I remember hearing, but maybe it's not right.
The Rembrandts, I'll be there. Why do I know that that's the Rembrandts? I don't know.
I've been talking a lot with Ruby about how we used to consume music back in the day and the idea that you'd have to buy the entire Rembrandts album for that song.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
probably find out that it's the only song on that album that sounds like that. That happened all the time, where you buy it for one song, and then, like, lo and behold, you find out the rest of it is, like, nothing like it. Like, if you bought an Extreme album for More Than Words and found out, uh-oh, that's not what they do.
Dude, I have – half my CD collection is just stuff that I bought for one song. And then that's it.
Sean, you're right. It was the original theme is under a minute long, but they also recorded a 3-minute version. But, and I didn't know this, REM's Shiny Happy People was supposed to be the theme song to Friends. And REM was
what?
Like, this offer isn't good enough. So they went out and got, like, Warner Television went out and got the Rembrandts to do a ripoff version of it, basically.
Wow.
Holy shit. Okay.
Yeah. Incredible. You learn something new.
Okay. Underrated. Oh, wait. Oh, my overrated. My overrated is Gilligan's Island, and I'll tell you why. The original theme song to Gilligan's Island had did not include the professor and Marianne.
Yeah, and all the rest.
And I think if they had kept it at all the rest – oh, I disagree. I think if you had kept it at all the rest, it would have added an air of mystery to the show. Will these people who aren't mentioned in the theme song –
Scooby and Scrappy-Doo. That would have included the Harlem Globetrotters.
Right. But it's also like not only who will show up on the show, but will the Professor and Marianne survive?
Sure.
Why are they not in the theme song? It would have added a layers of mystery to the Gilligan's Island that were completely missing when they name checked the professor and Marianne in the thing. And also, everyone is known by their sort of like their like nom de plume, like they're known by what like,
Gilligan, you know, the skipper, the millionaire, wife, the movie star. All the
right. So only Gilligan and why isn't Marianne? Why doesn't she get some cool nickname? The farm girl, the country girl. She's the only one named by name other than the namesake of the show. It bugs me to no end, that theme song. So that's my underrated, Ryan.
You know, I like anyone that is theme from blank. And I think I have to go here, theme from Bonanza. Good,
not bad.
Good song.
Really good.
I'm going to go, like, my favorite just genre of TV theme songs is, like, the 80s sitcom. So I'm gonna throw some love at Perfect Strangers, I think, one of the absolute best of the that breed.
Yeah, it rocks.
It's good.
Standing on the Wings of My Dreams is...
Yeah, wow. It's a great song on its own. It has nothing to do with the show, really, but, you know.
No, yeah. Is that one of the ones written by Alan Thicke?
I think they were all written by Alan Thicke.
I don't know if that one was. I'm going to look this up here.
I think you might be right on that one. I think he might have written that one.
Let's see. He wrote the themes from Different Strokes, The Facts of Life, which, once you know that, and then... just half the game shows on TV, including the original Wheel of Fortune theme song.
Wow.
Yeah, so there you go.
Okay, underrated for me would be The X-Files, which is one of my favorite themes of all time. And I just think The X-Files has sort of fallen out of the public eye, especially because the revival of the show was pretty dog shit.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's why it hasn't fallen out of the public eye. They did a revival of it like 2 years ago.
But it was bad. It didn't really make any impact. That theme song set the fucking tone, man.
Yeah,
just
really
set
good.
The tone.
Really, really good.
Real good stuff. Oh, what are we on now?
Favorite,
yeah. Oof.
This is
so many good theme songs.
No, here.
Yeah,
this is the answer. The answer is theme from Cheers.
That's right up there. That's a
where everyone knows your name. And they're always glad
like,
you came.
You know, you know it from that first piano key.
Yep. That one's a great one.
It also set, you know what? You know it from the first line. Like you know the kind of bar flies you're going to meet.
Yep.
Making your way in the world today takes everything you've got. These are hardworking, fucking hard scrabble, blue collar motherfuckers who just want to kick back with a beer.
Taking a break from all your worries? Sure would help a lot. Wouldn't you like to
get
away?
Wouldn't it though? I love it. Great, great pick.
I've got three and I can't choose because it's like picking my, first of all, we talked about with Brady Bunch, we talked about the genre of the theme song that explains what the show's about. Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Hell yeah.
Just a classic, especially the extended version that doesn't cut out the whole middle that makes it make sense. So I put that one up there. I know we're kind of more not doing sports shows, but the theme from This Week in Baseball to this
Twip
day
notes.
Gets me fired up. I want to get outside and like start throwing the ball around it when I hear that. And the other one, I feel like if I had to pick one, I feel like this is the one. The theme from Gary Shandling Show.
Yep, it's Gary Shandling
Yes!
Show.
Yes!
All-time classic.
I will say this though, if we're gonna include like sports related TV shows, the answer is Hockey Night in Canada.
That would be up there too, for sure. Yeah.
I think ESPN's hockey theme is better than hockey.
No, you know what? I take it all back. Round Ball Rock.
Favorite again. There's so many choices. By the way, I'm gonna retroactively change my my underrated, because I think the X-Files theme is pretty rated. I do have an underrated one that I had under favorite that I'll now move to that category, which is the theme from Luke Cage. Did you watch Luke Cage, Ryan?
No.
Oh, fuck. Wrong. It's so good. I highly recommend the theme to Luke Cage.
I'm gonna
pass. One of the better TV Marvel things that's happened until WandaVision. Favorite for me, it's between three. The Price is Right. Tremendous theme song.
Yep,
gets
really
you right
good.
In the mood. And then two that are kind of in the same genre. I love the theme to Roseanne. I always felt like it really set the tone again for what you're about to see. It's big and brassy, but it's also very blue collar. But I got to tell you, I think the best theme song of all time might be Sanford and Son. It's so good.
Yeah, it's it's really good. I mean, if we're doing honorable mentions, moving on up is
that's
incredible.
Also
incredible.
Yes.
What's the name of that show? Hawaii 5-0 has an amazing theme song.
Oh fuck yeah! Absolutely. Oh, we could go on for days with honorable mentions.
Let me just one last one to throw out there, just because you kind of broke the seal on game shows. Definition. I don't even know if you guys got that.
Yeah, I don't know
show.
What that is.
It's a Canadian game show. The theme song was they used as the theme song the same song they used from Austin Powers, the Quincy Jones instrumental.
really?
But this was before. That's where Mike Myers got it from.
Got it from?
It's a Canadian show.
Oh, that's killer.
And there's a great a Canadian rap band actually did like a version of a song called My Definition. Which was a great big hit that uses that as like, I mean, what's more Canadian than taking a Canadian game show theme song and dropping rap lyrics over it? Still one of the great moments in Canadian music. I've recommended highly.
Oh, the other one to mention, of course, Mission Impossible.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Incredible. Like, so good they even use it in the movies to this day. And everybody's like, when the theme song hits, like, you know, after the first act or the cold open or whatever, everybody's like, let's fucking go. We're ready to run through a wall with Ethan Hunt here.
I like it. Least favorite, Ryan.
I feel bad saying this, because there's nothing, it's nothing against the show itself, but I think the answer is Got Yourself a Gun by the Alabama Three, the theme from The Sopranos.
From The Sopranos?
It is a horrible song, you know, and I just heard it 70 times because I rewatched the whole show in like a month. It stinks. It's really bad. And so my theory was always that, you know, like all the music in The Sopranos is like really bad. And my theory was that it was just to be like, this is what these horrible people think is good, you know? And it turns out people are just, you know, I've read subsequently that it's just David Chase has really bad taste in music. So. It happens. And then the other one that I did want to mention, just because I didn't like the show as a kid, and, you know, it was always on after The Simpsons, and so I would hear the opening, like, line or two before I got up to change the channel, was the theme from MASH, Suicide is Painless.
Oh.
Oh, ooh, that's controversial.
That's a controversial pick. I think a lot of people like them.
But it's just because of the association of this show I don't like is on, and my favorite show is over. It sucks. Get out of here.
That's kind of where I'm going with mine, too, because I remember as a kid at 6 o'clock on TV Ontario, they did two kid shows, half an hour at 6 and then again at 6:30, And then at 7 o'clock, right away, public TV, there's no commercials, Doctor Who came on, and that opening scared the crap out of me.
It's so scary. Oh my God, that's such a good pick.
My parents would rush to turn it off, but I would still, like, the first 30 seconds of that, and then that, so I'm to this day.
Yes.
So that's my pick with a runner-up honorable mention to the theme from Frasier, where you just let the star of the show sing some nonsense song that nobody understands. Just because
I understand it perfectly.
You do not.
Here's the blues of Colin.
Yeah. And then what?
There's some tossed salads and scrambled eggs.
He references his time in prison. Right, and then he goes from there.
Well, no, I mean, like, he's talking about the kooks who call his show. I hear the blues a-callin', toss salad and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
Mercy.
And maybe it seem a bit confused, but baby, I got you pegged, right? Like, it's again, explaining the concept of the show. But he doesn't know what to do with those tossed salad and scrambled eggs. Like, the person who he has pegged, well, I think that's a young man named Niles Crane.
Yeah, a lot of tossing salad and pegging in that theme song. Now that we hear it for what it is, Doctor Who is such a great pick because I was the same way when I would hear the woo,
dude. Don't
come on!
I'm not
scary as shit. Yeah, and then like it would come on and it's a guy in grandma's overcoat running away from a guy in a Halloween mask wearing a cardboard box, you know?
Yeah, like, but there's some robot trying to shoot him. Like, I'm not ready for this, man. I was just watching a singing bear. I don't need this dropped on me right now.
The Dalek voice is also very scary, too. The exterminate voice. Scary. I'm sorry. I don't want you to relive your trauma. Three for least too favorite late. For me. All right. Two for least favorite for me. No, three. Mad TV had a horrible theme song. It was trying so hard to be the In Living Color theme song.
Well, again,
oh my God, In Living Color should absolutely be on a favorite list. Thank you for bringing that up, because that one, there were two versions. Both were excellent.
Mm-hmm.
But again, Greg, if we're talking about shows that set the stage, or theme songs that set the stage for the show, a theme song that says you are not watching Mad TV.
Yeah, they had us.
or theme songs that reflect the quality of the show. Extraordinarily good point, Ryan. Also, least favorite, to go into the sports genre for a second, the CBS football theme is bad when compared to all of the other football themes. Fox obviously has the, you know, sleigh ride adjacent song. Monday Night Football has an iconic theme. CBS is that do 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 do. It's very pedestrian, very sort of like they made up a theme because they needed it for a movie kind of theme. But my least favorite, I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but the Star Trek show Enterprise had a Diane Warren penned power ballad called Faith of the Heart that was its theme song. Now, you think of Star Trek, you think of, like, the Alexander Courage theme from the TV show. You think of all the music from the movies. This was, like, a sung song that opened up every episode of Enterprise. And it has to be the worst theme because it sparked petitions by Trekkies and or Trekkers to eliminate the song from the show. And they eventually dropped it.
Yeah, and these are famously people who have a really balanced and rational take on everything. So you can tell that it must have been bad.
Dead life, won't you, people? It's one of the greatest SNL sketches of all time. So that's my choice. Good choice. Spirited category, much better than my vacation is going to the park down the street.
I like going to Hawaii. Okay, man, cool. Good stuff.
My vacation is using the other bathroom in my house. We'll revisit the vacation one at a more appropriate time, is what I'm trying to say. All right.
Okay,
that's
see you
Puck
in 2023,
for this week,
folks.
Masks up, people. That's Puck Soup for this week. Thanks to my bookie for sponsoring the show. You
What's
can read
name?
My stuff on my bookie. It's my dad. My dad, by the way, since sports gambling was legalized in New Jersey, texts me every weekend with his picks that he's made and his little $30 parlays. I really hope this isn't hereditary. because he might be the worst gambler I've ever fucking seen. He picked the over in the Bills game, the Bills-Ravens game this past weekend, on a day that had like gale-forced winds, and just it was a bad scene. It was like 3-0 after like the first half or some shit. You can read my stuff on ESPN, more specifically on ESPN Plus, and you can watch me multiple days a week on Daily Wager on ESPN2, talking hockey and hockey wagering.
Sign up for the Puck Soup Patreon. We do bonus episodes. We do a weekly mailbag. Me and Sean already recorded this week's mailbag. It's about pizza and dinosaurs, so you know it's good. I have a newsletter. I have Stick to Sports. Ooh. With Sean Gentile. And it's all very affordable, and it's a good way to support the show and get extra content and all that shit. So check it out. Patreon.com/PuckSoup.
You can find me on The Athletic. You can find my writing there. The weekend rankings are back now that the season has started. You can also find my new podcast, which is part of the Athletic Hockey Show, which is a new show that just debuted, runs 3 times a week, including Thursdays, which is Ian Mendez and myself going over everything that has happened during the week.
Could have sworn we said you couldn't plug that, but okay.
I don't care. check it out, and if you like it, please, you guys listen to podcasts, you know the drill. Go find a place where you can leave a nice review and help bump it up the charts. That stuff matters for new shows, and it would be appreciated.
Right. Absolutely. That's Puck Soup for this week. Congratulations to the United States for making it through. we did it, folks.
Well, and a couple hundred thousand people very recently did not, but other than
no, that's true. Oh, I wasn't talking about that. I mean, those people, it's very sad, and it was a very touching memorial that we had this week. But yeah, it was an interesting week in the U.S. to say the least. I promised people we didn't do politics on the show anymore, so I'm not going to get into it. But you know, go USA. That's the show for this week. Thanks for the great suggestion on the topic, Stephen. And we will talk to you next week. Good luck to Jack Hughes in all his endeavors. Take care. Bye.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to what if you commute. We also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.